Hi everyone, I'm Paloma Contreras and you're listening to another episode of the Style Files podcast. I'm so thrilled to welcome today's guest, a friend of mine, Ariel Okin. Ariel Okin is the founder of her eponymous design firm, Ariel Okin Interiors, based in New York. Her portfolio ranges from traditional to contemporary with a focus on elegant, livable spaces. She's a graduate of Columbia University and George Washington University. She's been featured and profiled in Elle Decor, Domino, House Beautiful, Architectural Digest, Vogue, The Wall Street Journal, and New York Magazine, among others. She is a contributing writer to Vogue.com, Architectural Digest, and Domino, and was named one of the top 20 interior design Instagram accounts to follow by Domino. Current projects include a full floor gut renovation on the Upper West Side, an Upper East Side pied-à-terre, a hospitality project in Palm Beach, and multiple homes in the tri-state area. In addition, Ariel recently debuted collaborations with Society Social, where she's doing a really beautiful line of furniture, as well as wallpapers with Chasing Paper. Ariel, we're so excited to welcome you. Thanks so much for being here. Hi, Ariel. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Me too. I have been such a fan of the podcast, so this is such a thrill for me to be on.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, you've been such a good friend and have been such a supporter from the very beginning of the podcast.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So I really appreciate it.
It's been my companion during quarantine.
That's sweet. It's been a fun project. Certainly, you know, as the pandemic first started, just being able to connect with people like yourself who are doing interesting things and are inspiring not only to me, but to those who also love design. Mm-hmm. So it's been a nice outlet, but really nice to hear that you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's my treadmill.
I'm particularly excited to chat with you because I think that you have such a unique sort of position in the industry. And I believe that will be really fascinating for our listeners to hear about because, you know, you started out sort of as a journalist, as a writer.
Hello.
Okay. So I was saying that, you know, I think what's really interesting about you is that you've sort of worked in different facets of the industry, having been, and I guess you continue to be, a contributing writer to several high-profile outlets, including Vogue and Domino and several other publications. But you obviously are a busy working interior designer as well and quite an influencer. So I'm excited to dig into your background and hear more about how you ended up where you are and how you balance it all.
Yeah.
So have you always known that you would eventually land in the design industry?
No, definitely not. I mean, when I go back and look at what I loved to do as a kid, it makes a lot of sense. Because I was always, like, for fun, my mom would take me to Barnes & Noble on the weekends when I was, like, in middle school. And I would sit on the carpet at Barnes & Noble and page through all the coffee table books. And I loved Slim Aaron's books, and I would just sit and pore over them. But no, I mean, I went to undergrad for journalism. I went to GW for journalism. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of really thought I was going to go into political journalism. And then I interned for Audrey Gelman this summer in between grad school and college. I went to grad school in New York City. And I got my master's in strategic communications with an emphasis on public affairs. So I really thought I was going to go into politics in some way, shape, or form. And it never really occurred to me that design was something that I could do as a job. Like, it wasn't even remotely on my radar. But when I think about all of the things that I love to do for fun, it makes complete sense because there was always that thread of me kind of going there for comfort and for relaxation and not ever really putting two and two together that could be a career for me.
That's amazing. So eventually, how did you get into the design industry? What would you say was sort of your entree that opened you up to this industry and made you realize this is what you wanted to do with the rest of your life?
It was really organic. I moved to the city the summer of 2013 and people come over to my apartment and be like, oh, I love how you designed it or XYZ. And can you help me with my apartment? Or, you know, I'm moving with my boyfriend and can you help us edit our pieces down or, you know, little things like that. And I was working at a day job, you know, in a completely unrelated field. And so I would start to help friends on the side for fun. And then I really quickly realized that I was putting way more time into putting these presentations together for friends that I was doing for free. I would get, you know, stuck down these rabbit holes of like sourcing stuff for friends and putting really like rudimentary, primitive mood boards together for them. And so that's sort of how it started. And then it snowballed from there. And I kind of really quickly realized that that was something that I loved to do and it didn't feel like work. And it was something that I wanted to do full time, but I didn't jump into it quickly. I'd worked on the side for years until I opened my firm.
And when did you do that? What year did you open your firm?
So I started, well, I was at Home Polish first. So what I started to do was when I was doing this on the side, I started by shooting my apartment, which is something that I always tell people who call me for career advice is to start with shooting your apartment. Because if you don't have a portfolio, that's sort of the only place where you can start to show what your work looks like and what you want it to look like or what your aesthetic is. So right. I hired a professional photographer named Jane Ballas, who's wonderful. And we are still in touch today. She's the nicest woman ever. And she shot my apartment for me. And I took those images and started a website on Squarespace. And then sent a BCC email out to like everyone I knew and was like, hey, I'm looking to do this on the side. If anyone's interested, here's my work. I really want to grow my portfolio. You know, if you hear of anybody moving or looking for help, send them my way. And I got a lot of bites that way. And that was really how it started. And I was working at a day job. So I would take clients nights and weekends and just kind of, you know, pop over. But it was at that point, it was people who I knew or friends of friends. So I would go over to their apartments in the afternoons or weekends or things like that after work. And then a friend of mine's mom introduced me to Noah from Home Polish. She said, you know, I met this guy in the city at an event, and I thought, you know, it would be good for you to meet him with the design stuff you're doing. And that really changed everything for me, because when I started Home Polish, that really, it was sort of a right place, right time. It was really at the beginning of when they were starting in like 15. It was just luck, I think. And it was, you know, good timing. So I met with Noah and he said to me, because I was kind of like, do I need to go back to school? Do I need to, you know, go take a CAD course? Do I need to XYZ? And mind you, I had just come from a 2-year grad program. So my mom was like, you are not going to another. Like, she was like, absolutely not. Like, no. So I was talking about it with Noah and he gave me really good advice, which was that, you know, you can learn CAD and, but taste can't really be taught for the most part. So he was like, if you feel like you have a handle on this, run with it. And it kind of gave me the inspiration that I needed to, you know, not get in my own way and not be afraid to do something that felt different. And so I kind of just went in blindly and it worked, but it was a long time of doing. So Home Polish in the beginning would match me with clients and I would go again on nights and weekends and I would slowly build my portfolio and shoot small things as they came up. And I did that for about 2.5 years while working at my day job until my portfolio, I felt my portfolio was in a place where it was big enough. And that I felt like clients were coming in at a rate that I felt comfortable with, where I left and went full time. And when I left my day job, I was full time with Home Polish for about like 9 months. And then I left Home Polish to go out fully on my own. Because even though I was at Home Polish, I was still at Home Polish. You know, I wasn't really on my own. So I was with them for about 9 months and then, I mean, I was with them for years, but then, on you know, it was like a side thing. And then when I fully went all in, after about 9 months, I was like, you know what? I think I really feel ready to expand and to grow. And it was sort of like I outgrew the model and wanted to be on my own. But it took like 4 years to get to that point.
Right. Well, what I'm hearing is I feel like you've been really smart about identifying opportunities and really listening to your gut about when the time is right to try something new or perhaps to go to the next stepping stone or the next chapter. And I mean, even just the fact that you, I feel like the fact that you reached out to your network and said, hey, if you hear of anyone who needs a designer, send them my way. It's such an old school thing to do, but obviously so effective. And I think that that's really smart because half the time, I think a lot of people, you know, struggle with how do I find more work, especially when they're starting out, or how do I keep my pipeline full? And a lot of times it's just a matter of asking for referrals
and word of
working,
mouth,
you know, your personal
absolutely
network.
Word of mouth is the best to this day, the best way. We get our favorite, like not favorite projects, but like the best clients come from happy clients, you know? So if we worked with a happy client and they send somebody else our way, like we know it's going to be a great experience off the bat because they came in from someone we knew and we had a great experience with them. And it's almost like a pre-screening of, you know, word of mouth, which is, I think, undervalued. I think people don't really appreciate the word of mouth tactic. I think there's so much emphasis placed on Instagram, which is a great driver of business. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. It's a huge driver of our business, but the network is also a big piece of it.
Definitely. Would you say that your projects, the referral source for your projects is about half and half personal referrals and Instagram, or does one
influence
more?
I think they're more about 50-50. I think it's always the best compliment to us when we get a project through a past project because it means that they had a good experience and they loved working with us. But it's also amazing. Like we get a lot of DMs that turn into a client, things like that. I always try to respond to as many DMs as I can because like you just never know where it's going to go, even though it's really time consuming to do that, which I'm sure you know because you also respond to all of your messages. But it's hard. But I do think that the two together combine to be a great driving source of new clients for sure.
Definitely. What advice do you have for listeners who might be hoping to grow their Instagram following? How can they leverage Instagram to possibly grow their business and to sort of start building a brand?
You know, I think consistency has been the number one thing that's helped me. I never really try to like, you know, I don't use Planoly or any of the grid things. I just sort of, I make sure to post every day, which I learned from watching Ashley Stark. She posts at least once a day, if not sometimes like four times a day. And Ashley's done such an amazing job of growing her following. It's crazy.
I know.
But I think consistency in posting, consistency and authenticity in what you're posting, like making sure that you're not trying to put, if that makes sense, like you want to post things that feel really true to your personality. Cause I think that's what people are coming there for. You know, they want to see you and people can sniff out, when it doesn't feel real. And I think those two things are really key. And then I think in terms of, I mean, I haven't done a ton of research on this, but I have found that if you don't engage with all of the tools that Instagram gives you, you kind of do get punished in the algorithm. So trying to use all the different, I mean, I have no idea how to use Reels. I feel like I'm 90, but I can't figure it out.
You beat me to the punch. I was going to ask
no,
if you started using Reels because I haven't
so bad
either.
At it. I have no idea. I tried. It's embarrassing. I should know how to use it. But I need like a tutorial from someone. Amy Studebaker has been doing a really good job with her Reels. I really like them. She like
amazing.
Plays nice music and does like house tours and client tours. It's beautiful. But no, that's the one thing I haven't done. But everything else, I try to utilize, you know, stories and posts and hashtags and, you know, responding to the comments in the comment section and tagging and all of the sort of options that Instagram gives you. Because I do find that the more you interact with it in that way, it does seem to be a positive result. But that's just a theory of mine and not something that I've actually like tested.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, actually. I feel like you're probably right on the money when it comes to the engagement, not only with the different facets of Instagram, but primarily with just engaging totally. With one's audience. I think that's really the key to growing a social media following, is really engaging with the people who are spending time on your profile and looking at your images and commenting.
And it's really gratifying,
but
too.
I mean,
it's so nice that people are messaging. And I get really good tips. Like today, a squirrel, I put pumpkins outside of our front door. And it's the first time we've like lived in a house. So I used to put them outside of our front door when we lived in an apartment building. But squirrels like decimated my pumpkins. And I got like 25 messages from people being like, oh, you have to put Elmet on them or put hairspray. And I was like, well, this is really helpful. And I didn't even mean to crowdsource anything, but I got it.
Well, don't feel badly, because I live in Texas, so I've always lived in a house, and I never knew that you needed to spray anything on your pumpkins.
I mean, Charlie was going nuts this morning because there was like three squirrels going, having like a buffet of pumpkin outside of our door.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, back to your point about social. I mean, I agree with what you said, and it's what I frequently say as well. It's the consistency and transparency, the authenticity, that's super important. Just being authentic to your actual voice and your taste, and not necessarily feeding into, you know, the other things that you're seeing in your feed that seem to be popular, really staying true to your core and thinking about, you know, who it is that you want to attract, and sort of ensuring that your posts are geared towards that person, and that's reflective of your core aesthetic. But as you mentioned, you know, that consistency, and I think that consistency is sort of two pronged. It's, you know, the consistency in terms of cadence, how frequently are you posting, but also the quality, you know, making sure that you have really great, compelling images, which is hard sometimes. I mean, this year I think has been really hard for me on social, only because I'm not traveling like I typically do, and our projects have taken longer to complete. And so I don't have the sort of battery of photography that I normally do, you know? So I'm like, geez, now what do I post today?
Every couple months, and with COVID, we haven't shot a thing in like 9 months. We just scheduled our first shoot for November 24th, but for that exact reason, like we need content. And we have like 13 projects lined up that I want to shoot, but I'm terrified to shoot them because, you know, it's really hard to be on set that close to people. So it's definitely, COVID has definitely impacted the business in so many ways. One of them being just the production of photography for portfolios, and engaging in Instagram with your own original content in that way.
Yeah. It's so true. I think everybody's probably in
the
same boat.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've definitely been hearing
What are some of your favorite Instagram accounts?
Oh my God,
follow?
So many. I get stuck down a rabbit hole. I've been...
You always have really good ones, because I see you, like, repost, you know, you share a lot of stuff to your story. I love seeing your story because it's always based on, like, a mood, I guess. And I always find
Thank
new people
you.
To follow
I
from
am,
that.
Well, I love yours, of course. And I love seeing Tate on there because he's, like, my Instagram friend.
Oh,
my
thanks.
Instagram furry friend. I don't know. I find so many random ones that I don't even know how I get to them. But, like, my recent favorite is Noel Pittman. It's Noel Pittman
Design.
I don't
know that one.
They have... like wonderful old vintage images that are just excellent, and like it's really well edited and well curated, and every time they post something I'm like, oh my God, this is great. I love Landa Bell. My friend Annabelle has a great eye, and she curates her feed really well, I think. There's just so many. I love Atelier VM. Just so many different accounts that have gorgeous imagery that I just kind of stumble on. I don't use the explore page that much. I think I kind of find it by like I'll find an account that I like, and then there's a drop down underneath that and it shows you similar accounts. So that's kind of how I find the random ones that are like from nowhere.
Well, that's smart. So you really are utilizing
I
all of the
guess,
features
yeah,
of
I try. I mean,
Instagram.
I love being able to find reference images that sort of feel like they're buried or hidden, or haven't been seen a lot, because I think that's where you find a new idea or fresh inspiration. So, I almost feel like I'm like uncovering a treasure when I find some like really, really dated image from like House and Garden in the 80s or 60s or 70s, something like that. And I have so many pictures saved on my in my saved folder. It's fun. I mean, it's
Yeah.
a time suck, but it's also, I tell myself it's work.
Well, yes, that's true. Ariel, how would you describe your style to those
I would say
listening?
traditional with a twist. I mean, I definitely lean toward classic silhouettes, classic color combinations, more of a traditional aesthetic, certainly in the home. But I try to always incorporate some contemporary elements, whether it's contemporary or modern art mixed with a traditional space, or even my wardrobe. Like, I tend to be really crisp and neutral. I think I only wear like three colors. Definitely kind of well edited, but with a twist there.
Amazing. Yeah, I definitely see that both in your wardrobe and in your interiors. I think there's definitely a common
Yeah.
sort of thread. And I find that interesting. I do think generally, not always, but most of the time, people, designers, their style is oftentimes reflected in their
Totally.
wardrobe as well. There are exceptions, like a Peter Marino.
Yes.
There are definitely exceptions of people who don't necessarily dress the
Yes.
way that they decorate, but I think generally speaking, if somebody's like sort of feminine and loves bold colors and prints and that sort of thing, that's going to be reflected in their wardrobe. And oftentimes, if they're more minimal and sleek, that also shows up
Absolutely.
a little bit. But there are others who argue that there's absolutely
I
no
think there
connection,
is. I
so who
think it's
knows?
sort of like a direct line between what you gravitate toward. And fashion is so much about textile and color palette, which is so much of what we do, that I think it's like hard to almost avoid the connection in some ways.
Yeah, definitely. Where do you turn for inspiration these
I have a
days?
book problem. I Ben put like a moratorium on me buying more books, because I like literally really collect them. I love them. I love vintage coffee table books. I love reading, you know, the new books that come out in the fall and spring. Design books are really my passion, and I have started to collect them in a way that my husband is not thrilled with. But I love them, and I find so much inspiration in seeing a designer's portfolio laid out in such a thoughtful way, because you start to pick up on the threads of how they do what they do and why things are constructed in a way. And I think you can learn so much from reading those books. You also learn a lot about great photography and what you want your own photography. So I would say that is the primary place that I go for inspiration. And then Instagram, I really do love just kind of aimlessly scrolling. It's a bad habit, and I watched, have you seen the new Netflix documentary? Yes,
Oh, The
it
Social Dilemma. I started watching it and then I had to
I
stop because I was
know.
like, this
I
is
was
kind of
like, I
depressing. I
when it ended, I was like, well, I'm gonna just justify this and tell myself that it's because of work. Like, I'm not doing personal stuff on Instagram, so but I do spend, you know, a lot of time on Instagram looking for images and stuff, but I enjoy it, so I tell myself it's not that bad.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a necessary
Totally. And
job
it's so
hazard
ingrained
for
in what we
sure.
do. I mean, everybody is kind of in it together, for in the design world at least.
Definitely. Well, and it also, I think right now is kind of our only
Oh my
form
God,
of
yes.
connection in the design world to a certain degree, because we're also accustomed
So
to,
many
a lot
events.
of us work outside of our hometowns. And so, we visit one another in different cities, and there's always industry events happening throughout the year in
Yeah.
different places, and everybody, runs into each other there. And that
I
just
know.
hasn't been the same this year. So I think it's a
Absolutely.
nice
It's
way to
been kind of like a
connect.
saving grace in that sense, because, you know, I haven't been to, I've, well, High Point in the spring was obviously didn't happen. And then I didn't go this fall. And it's just so nice to be able to see what people are up to and kind of stay in touch on over the message, over DM, when, you know, usually you would see people at least a handful of times a year at different industry events and stuff.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I miss all of my design friends and getting out and seeing new things. I feel like I'm always online looking at
I know. I really miss now. Going to the D&D and shopping in physical stores. We haven't done much of that. I mean, I haven't been to the D&D since March, but the girls have been a couple times on my team because they're still in the city. But now that I'm out of the city, I'm not there as much. So I do miss the D&D like terribly.
I'm sure. Well, to that point, you recently moved out of the city and into the suburbs. You bought a new house and you've been very busy renovating. How's it going?
It's really fun. I mean, it's so interesting to be your own client, I think. In some ways, I felt like the cobbler with no shoes. And in other ways, I felt like I knew exactly what I wanted and like moved really quickly. So it kind of depends on the room. But it's interesting what you get stuck on as a designer with your own house versus like for a client.
Yes, that's true. Have you had an easy time of making decisions, or do you find yourself walking?
For the most part, I've been really decisive, and I tend to be really decisive, and I tend not to waffle. So when I do waffle, I'm like, "What? Like, is there a reason that I'm waffling?" And I try to listen to that intuition. But there are a few things that I like, our laundry, like random things that I am still just holding out on.
Yeah. I feel like you've done a lot of wallpaper, right? In the house. Can you tell us a little bit about your plans for what you're planning?
The dining room I did, with Mural Sources, which is really exciting. We're going to have, I did it in a custom colorway, and then we're actually going to launch a couple colorways in January. Which I'm really excited about. So I did a pale, almost like a green tea, a pale green, chinoiserie in my dining room with sort of a tea paper effect, from Mural Sources. And I love Mural Sources because they digitally print, so they're not as crazy expensive as hand painted, but the quality is really good, which is really hard to find, I think.
Right, so really great resource for chinoiserie wallpaper.
Yeah,
for those
great
listening.
Resource for chinoiserie wallpaper at an affordable price point that's not hand painted but is digitally printed and done with really good quality. And then I wallpapered our powder room in the vases, that classic Clarence House print, which I love. And I wanted to do yellow somewhere in my house, so that was sort of where I did it.
Oh, fun. I feel like yellow is
so
really
underrated.
I always love
house,
it, but I never get to use it.
House growing up, which had such an impact, I think, on the way that I design now, and I never really connected the two until recently when I was doing our own home, and I just kept going back to like pictures that I have in my phone from the house I grew up in, because I guess I just have good happy memories of like the house as a whole there. But there was a yellow and white striped paper that was in the foyer going up into the entryway, and it's so cheerful. Yellow is such a happy color, and I think it's going to really come back now, especially because people need a cheerful palette.
Yes, I hope so. Maybe 2021.
I honestly think it's
coming.
I mean, I see a lot of it kind of like starting already, even just on Instagram. But the powder room is yellow, and then there's a lot of green, a lot of blue, which is not surprising to anyone who follows me. and I've also been really into chocolate brown lately, so there's a decent amount of that, like kind of peppered everywhere.
Yeah, chocolate brown is such a great, when you get it in the right tone, it's such a great,
and it's
neutral.
Really delicious. I mean, especially in a velvet or something, it's just so yummy. So that's been really, I mean, designing for yourself, as you know, when you do something in your own home or your office, it's such a reflection of you and your portfolio. I mean, it's like doing a show house room in a lot of ways. So I really try to just go for what I'm really the most gravitating toward and what feels like me, because ultimately you want it to be just an expression of who you are and sort of nothing more, nothing less.
Exactly. That's great. Well, I'm excited to see how it all comes together. I'm sure it's going to be so beautiful.
You. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm so antsy to get it done.
Well, in addition to buying the new house and obviously taking under the renovation, you've also launched product collaborations mm-hmm. this year, including a capsule furniture collection with Society Social and wallpaper with Chasing Paper. How was the idea for these collections born and what inspired your designs?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that all of that happened in 2020 feels like it's been 5 years in one. I started talking to Society Social, who I know you had Roxy on the show. Roxy's great. And, we met on Instagram, and we started DMing, and I just kind of threw it out there to her. I was like, I love your product. And I also love the ethos too of making traditional design and elements of custom design with, you know, CUM fabric or tape trim or things like that, available to non-trade. I love that she's doing that for retail. I think it's really, different and unique and disruptive. And I feel like there's not that many companies that do that. So I just really was drawn in by her whole sort of, ethos. And so I said, would you ever be interested in doing a line? And they had never done it with another interior designer, and she was down, and I'm so happy that she wanted to, because it was the best experience. It was my first experience with product. It was really fun. I came to you for some advice at the beginning. and it was just the best experience of being able to sort of translate what, you know, the way I kind of approached that was, what are the pieces that we really need or make custom often for clients, and how can we kind of iterate them to make them part of a collection? Mm-hmm. You know, we designed for a ton of young families. So, you know, an upholstered ottoman that felt elevated and rooted in design history, but also could withstand a three-year-old jumping on it. So was the idea for the Bobby, which is a wicker trompe l'oeil base with an upholstered top. You know, the Amy console came from me not being able to find a console for our own apartment in the city, because we lived in New York and the dimensions there are just minuscule, and I wanted something that had a really narrow depth. So kind of that was where that came from, all the inspiration for that. And similarly for Chasing Paper, which is the wallpaper collection, I worked with Ashley Begley, who's a wonderful artist and a friend of mine, and she's so talented. She's so the best. Talented. She just had a baby. I'm so excited for her. She's just the best. And she also grew up outside of Philly, where I'm from, and I just love her. So I went to Ashley because we've been talking about wallpaper for a while and doing something, and we were like, oh, it would be such a dream to you know, apply your talent to wall coverings. And this came about. I met Elizabeth, who runs Chasing Paper, through a mutual friend, and I did the same thing. I said, hey, would you ever be interested in doing a collaboration? Which I think is a good lesson of, like, don't be embarrassed to ask. If what's the worst someone can say? They'll say no. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth was down. And so that was how that started. And Ashley and I kind of looked at a bunch of reference images. And she came from a background of pattern. I mean, she went to RISD, and then she drew fabric patterns for Lily Pulitzer for a while before she went out on her own and launched her studio. So she's just got such a beautiful hand, and her watercolors are so pretty. So it was just a joy to be able to work with both of them. And all these women running businesses, it was an inspiration for me to see also. I mean, Elizabeth and Roxy both have young kids. So I actually had my daughter like in the thick of planning for both of the launches release. So I got a lot of mom advice too, which was very nice.
Well, speaking of, I'd love to chat a little bit about that because you have the most precious
Oh,
little girl,
thank
Sophie.
you.
I love her. She's such a doll. She's
Thank
so
you.
cute. What has it been like adjusting not only to motherhood, but also being a working mom? How do you balance
Well, I don't
everything?
believe in balance. I think at some point I saw something on Instagram actually the other day that was like, "Let your you have to accept that you're juggling a bunch of balls, and some of those balls are plastic and some of them are glass, and so you have to know which ones are glass." Meaning your priorities day to day are going to shift, and that's okay, and you need to know, you know, where to focus the most attention on any given day, and not to beat yourself up about the balls, the ball that are plastic. Which I think applies to anything, not just being a working mom. But it's a great tip on delegation. And I think it's impossible to not beat yourself up about, you know, did I spend enough time with her today? Or did I have enough time on my all hands meeting with my team? Or, you know, XYZ. But I think being kind to yourself about it and just trying to do the best you can do is really the only way to do it. And also to not be afraid to delegate to your team and say, you know, hey, it's a really crazy week for me this week. Would you mind helping me with XYZ? Or, you know, accepting help. On the other hand, you know, ask, like, sometimes I'll say to Ben, can you do XYZ or whatever? So I think a big part of it is not being embarrassed to accept the help when you need it, which I think there's like this myth of being superwoman, and doing everything by yourself all the time, and you're just going to be crazy if you try that, and it doesn't exist. So I think that's where a lot of being able to get everything done lies, in a little bit of delegation and not being mad at yourself that you have to delegate.
That's such an important reminder. I think it's really hard for a lot of us, women especially, just being pleasers
Totally.
and doers, wanting to, check everything off the list every day. And like you said, being able to find peace within oneself, the comfort to reach out for help when you need it, to say no to something. I mean,
Oh my
I struggle
God.
with that. That's certainly something that I struggle with. I think in my personal life, I'm more apt to like ask my husband for help in things, but it's really challenging for me to feel like I'm not the one who needs to
Totally,
do
especially
stuff
when it's your own
work
firm
wise.
because it's your name and you feel like your hand has to be on everything, which at the end of the day it should. But if you're having a really crazy day, it's okay to say, hey, can you draw this up in CAD or XYZ? You know, I think that organization of tasks and like who does what and XYZ is what's really helpful in trying to achieve some type of, I mean, I don't know if balance is the right word, but equilibrium.
Yeah, equilibrium, I think, is probably a better descriptor in that, like you said, will we ever achieve full
Right.
balance? No. Are there enough hours in the day or enough bandwidth to do everything that you want to do or need to do to the degree that you would like to do it
Right.
all? Probably not.
I think one of the, I think maybe it was
But
your
I mean,
podcast, I heard Bunny Williams say early on, one of her best business tips that she learned was to delegate the things that she wasn't the
yes.
best at. And I heard that early on in my career. And it is the best piece of advice that you can give anyone who's starting a new business because I am not a numbers person. And so I don't do my books because I would make tons of mistakes and they would be costly. So, you know,
Right.
identifying the things that you shouldn't be taking on is really just as much of an important thing as identifying the things that you should, you know, be leading.
Definitely. I 100% wholeheartedly agree with that. I'm a big believer in best use of talents on a team and really sort of going down the line and figuring out, okay, what are the things that only I can do? And having every team member figure that out. What are the things that only I can do that no one else can do or take off of my plate that cannot be delegated? And those are the things that each individual should be
Totally.
focusing on. And then the rest of it can get
Yeah, and
delegated
I think
out.
it's empowering for team members too to sort of own their own specialty.
Yes, Indeed. How big is your
We have
team now?
four. I have two junior designers and then I have two project managers.
That's so great. And they're all in the city and you're in the
So
suburbs now.
two are in the city, both junior design, Callan and Ellie, my junior designers, are in the city. And then our operations director is in Austin and she's remote. And she's been with me since
Oh,
day one. She came from Home Polish. She is like my left brain. She is my right hand
wow.
and my left brain. And like we finish each other's sentences. So we've been together since I first started. And then Jen lives in Connecticut near me. And she's our other project manager. Yeah.
That's great. What is your operations director doing for you? Is that like all of the accounting and financials,
It's
the
yeah, it's
business
all
side of things?
invoicing, project management, coordinating with the receiving warehouses, all the purchasing, all the logistics, basically. Yeah.
That's so great. And that's such a pivotal role, a critical role, especially for you as a principal, to have someone who can do all of that, because not only does a big part of that role take a lot of stress off of your team's plate, but then there are things that if it weren't for her, they would fall onto
Oh,
you. So
thousand
great that you
percent.
have someone that you can
Yeah,
rely
I am
on.
so grateful. I mean, I love the girls on my team so much. They're all amazing, and I'm so grateful for them literally every single day, especially with a 14-month-old. And Laura also has a baby. We had babies 3 months apart. Yeah,
Oh, wow.
so I just feel so lucky to have them. And like the operations girls do things that I just can't do. Like their strengths are my weaknesses, and they just really make the team run, and they're amazing. And the design team, like, they can read my mind aesthetically too, which has become so great over the past couple months when we can't meet in person, because we've been
Right.
doing a lot of Zoom and everything remotely. So I'll say, can you pull XYZ for me? And they like really get what I'm saying, which is a blessing. And they're all great. So I feel lucky to have them.
That's amazing. That's so great. I mean, that really is a blessing to have such a great team, especially those that are sort of on the same wavelength as you
Totally.
are, and to have that implicit trust between
Yeah.
all
And
of
I
you.
think like when you're running a business, you're team is everything, and so I'm just so grateful to have them, because it's not a one-woman show, and there's so much work, as you know, that goes on behind the scenes. Even on a day-to-day basis, things are delayed, or a sofa can't get through a service elevator, or so many little fires that we that every designer deals with on a day-to-day basis. So yeah.
That's so great. And so
Oh my
true.
God.
Lots
People
of little fires
don't even
everywhere,
realize
every
like the
day.
drama and like the day-to-day silly things that happen every single day, but especially in the city, because you have to deal with the added layer of the supers and the co-op boards and the service elevators and
Right.
the it's like a whole nother world.
Yes, a whole nother layer of potential complications and places for things to go wrong.
Exactly.
I feel like we have to have so many safeguards in place for like every last thing that goes
Totally.
into a
I have
client's home.
found that being a designer has been helpful as a mother, because part of your job as a designer is to forecast like anything that can go wrong and try to fix it from a client services perspective before it happens. But it also just like hardwires your brain to like recognize things that can go wrong. So like I feel like I'm like always hovering around Sophie, like waiting for her to fall or something.
That's funny. I wonder if designers as a whole are generally more anxious, or if we're just more
I
prepared. I feel
know.
like you could toe the
I
line
know.
one way or the other, depending on the
1,000%.
day. So one other amazing facet, I think, of your business is the content that you're creating. So you recently brought back your website, Fenimore
Yeah.
Lane, in a big way. I'm so impressed. I can't believe I can hardly keep up with my blog
Thank
anymore.
you.
But you created all of this amazing content across multiple categories. You have these great interviews and recipes and travel guides and all kinds of great stuff. what made you realize it was time for a new iteration of the blog? And what do you hope that readers will glean from it?
You know, when I started my business, my company name, my design company name was Fenimore Lane Interiors LLC. And I quickly realized that it should really just be my name, because it's easier to operate mm-hmm. that way. But I always held on to the Instagram handle because I knew one day I wanted to do this. And it just had to be the right time. And for so long, I was pitching and writing for so many other outlets that I felt like I couldn't give my full attention to doing something like this. But then COVID hit and I was home. I didn't have anything, you know, anywhere to be. And I was like, you know what, I was actually really inspired by you because you started this podcast during quarantine. And I was like, well, Paloma did that and I should try to just, you know, light a fire under my butt and actually do the thing that I said I want to do. So you know, a lot of the websites aren't taking, you know, I wrote for Vogue and AD and Domino for a long time, and some of them aren't taking outside freelancer pitches right now. They're trying to keep everything in-house. And so there were a lot of articles that I wanted to write, but everything was moving really slowly. And so I was like, well, if I had my own outlet, I could, you know, even if it's just about exercising that writing muscle and writing the stories mm-hmm. I want to write, that was really where it came from. And being able to like post a recipe or things like that. So it's more like a journal of things that I find interesting, truthfully. And I love doing the Q&A, which I have read almost every Q&A on your website. I love, you know, I've read your website for like 10 years. I loved it from the beginning.
Thank you
and I've
so
always
much.
Been such a fan of Dolce Vita and of yours. And I think as a creative, there's something so valuable and interesting in reading interviews with other creatives, you know, seeing where they get their inspiration or what their favorite coffee table book is, or, you know, random little questions that tell you about who they are and what their character is. And so that's been a real joy of launching Fenimore Lane, is doing those Q&As.
I love the Q&As. I read all of them and I always learn something new about either the person that I am reading about, or maybe I haven't heard of that specific person. And so it's fun to discover someone new to follow.
Yeah.
And then just like you said, to hear, to read all about their favorite things, where they draw inspiration from, you know, what they're seeing in the world and their perspective. It's really fascinating. And you've done such a beautiful job with it.
That makes me so happy that you read them.
Of course I read them. I love them.
It's been fun. I mean, it's been really nice to be able to write stuff to and not have to pitch it, which is like a novelty for me. So that's a nice perk of it too.
Yeah, well, and I think it's an important reminder to people who are listening. I think as our world continues to evolve, especially in the world of design and in the publishing world, as things sort of shift gears and change constantly, and, you know, I love magazines so much, but it's now becoming harder and harder to get published because there are fewer magazines and fewer issues and fewer slots for projects and all of that. And it just sort of drives home the importance of having your own platform, whether that's, you know, a blog that's fully fleshed out like yours, where you're creating really strong content on a very regular basis, or just engaging with people on mm-hmm. Instagram or your favorite social media platform, but just using that channel as best you can to showcase your voice and your point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so important to build that platform across channels if you're trying to build a business, because what a time to be able to start a business where all of these options are available to you. You know, even 5-10 years ago, I feel like it wasn't the same thing. So there's so much opportunity to create now.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, it's actually very egalitarian in that we all have the same tools at our disposal. We all have essentially the same opportunities in the greatest sense of the word. What I think becomes a differentiator between one person and the next is obviously talent and training and all that, but also just, you know, the consistency and the quality of the content that they're creating, the way that they're utilizing those tools. But we all have them at our disposal, whereas, you know, 25 years ago, you might have had to be part of a certain social set to get the right clients, and then of course have the right industry connections to meet an editor and show them your work and all of that. And now everything is so democratized.
It's really interesting, and it's so nice to see that everybody on Instagram is kind of like liking and propelling each other's businesses too. Like, I find that the interior design community is so supportive of one another, which I love. And I think that part of that comes out of the fact that it's so small. And everybody really does get to know one another and is excited for one another when a new product launches or a book comes out, or, you know, you see everybody kind of perpetuating each other's brands. And I think that that's also just like a really beautiful part of social, because it didn't exist before. And yes, there would have been a book party for a book launch, or there would have been, you know, an opening at Schumacher for a new fabric line, but it wouldn't have been online for thousands of people to see the way that, you know, the new book is debuted, or who's reading it, or who's showing their favorite pictures from the book, or things like that. So I think that's also a favorite part of it too.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's such a supportive and wonderful industry, and one that I think generally embraces everyone. You know, I think if you put out good energy, put out good work, then all of that comes back to you.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm a big karma person.
I am too. I believe in energy and the kind of energy that you put out there and how that comes back to you.
1,000%. I think I think one, you have to like be nice to everyone because it always comes back to you. And two, if you really want something, like, you just envision it and you try to work really hard. And I so believe in all of that stuff. I know some people think it's totally crazy, but I'm fully on board with you there.
Yeah, I'm right there with you for sure. The power of positive thinking.
Totally.
Well, is there anything else people might be surprised to learn about you other than, you know, your belief in these sort of abstract concepts?
Well, people who haven't met me are always really shocked that I'm so short. I'm like 4'11". People don't really realize that I'm that small, I guess, on Instagram. things people don't know about me. Well, I worked in politics, which is super random. And a lot of people don't know that. And also, I don't know how to ride a bike, which is embarrassing.
Oh, yes, really? Well, you're going to have to learn by the time Sophie gets around.
I have to learn
learning
have
how to ride a bike.
So I have to, at some point, we do have like a nice little, like, we live in a cul-de-sac. So now I can practice with the other like 7-year-old kids who live in our cul-de-sac.
That's so funny.
It's so embarrassing.
What are you currently working on that you're most excited about?
We just took on a project in New Jersey, in Rumson, that's really exciting and beautiful, that I'm really excited about, and the clients are lovely. We have some new product stuff coming, like the mural sources is one, and lighting, which I can't say where yet, but that's coming up in spring.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then we're dipping our toe into hospitality, which is going to be, I can't really say what yet, but it's going to be November 2021.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I'm so happy for you. That's a lot of big stuff.
Thank you. I'm really excited. And hospitality was something that I have wanted to do for a really long time. So that's a dream for me that I'm really excited about. I always, when I get my planner for the year, it's like the nerdiest thing ever. But when I get my planner for the year, I write my goals in the back of it. And then at the end of the year, I try to like take stock. Well, quarterly, I try to take stock and see if I'm like hitting the goals. And then at the end of the year, I kind of like think about, okay, well, why didn't this work if I didn't get it achieved, or what could I have done better, X, Y, Z, which I think is a really good company planning thing to do in general. And I do it for personal stuff too. But one of the big things that I wrote like in all caps last year was hospitality. So it was really something that I wanted to do. So I'm really excited about that for sure.
That's amazing. Well, back to the power of positive thinking and the envisioning, you know, what you can make come true. That's amazing. Yeah. So that's your theory at work.
Yes. And I think also being, you know, not being afraid to ask. I went to an all-girls school growing up and they really like kind of ingrained in us, you know, nothing lost, nothing gained. If you ask for something and it doesn't work, you know, not to be embarrassed and to always sort of try to advocate for yourself. And it really like left a long standing impact on me. And I think that that's part of it too, is to be actionable in the things that you want to go for and to try to go after them.
Right. That's such a powerful message. I feel like that's a lesson that I learned later in life. I was painfully shy as a child and even as a teenager. And then into early adulthood, I still don't think I had the confidence to necessarily go after things or just outright ask.
And it's but hard. Now I'm very much of a mindset. It's really hard.
Now I agree with you. It's like, if you don't ask, the answer is no. So what's the worst people can say? You're right back where you started.
Exactly. And it's, you have to just sort of think of it as like, okay, well, if it doesn't work out, that's fine. But like, at least I tried. And that was such a big takeaway from the school I went to growing up. And, I think it just applies to so many different aspects of life.
Totally. If you could go back in time, is there a piece of advice that you would give your younger self?
Oh my God. So many. When I started college, I wore my hair in a poof. Like, yeah, like, you know, like how it would like kind of go half up, half down, but like kind of poofy.
But not like Snooki.
I mean, not like Snooki, but not like Snooki. And that was like a very mortifying time in life for me. Like looking back at photos, I thought it like accentuated my cheekbones and made me look better. But in hindsight, that was like, someone really should have, one of my best friends, Jen, actually at one point, second semester of freshman year college, was like, the clip is going away. Like, we're throwing it in the trash. We're not wearing it anymore.
That's so funny.
But yeah, I would have told myself no poof. Also just like, nothing is permanent. So if you're feeling something that's uncomfortable or you're going through a hard time, like everything is temporary. And I think that for the good moments too, you know, it's a good thing to think about in general, that time is sort of transient and everything that you experience in life is not ever going to be the same. So in the good moments, you really are, you take a step back and you're appreciative of the good moments and you're thankful for that. And in the bad moments, you can remind yourself, you know, this too shall pass. Not everything is forever. And I think that that's something that any, you know, teenager, college aged girl could benefit from.
Definitely. That's such an important life lesson and a good one, I think, for anyone to carry with them at any time.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, at any time. Well, Ariel, as we wrap up, I'll ask you one last question. What is currently giving you hope in the world of design or otherwise?
Oh, I mean, I have found it really inspiring to see in the world of design how everybody has sort of quickly adapted to the new circumstances and how people are really making lemonade out of lemons. You know, utilizing Zoom in creative ways for debuts or doing a virtual book party or bringing people together for a cocktail thing on Zoom or things like that. I mean, I think the pivot has been really inspiring to see because it doesn't mean that we're shut down. It just means that we're adapting and seeing that, you know, we can successfully do client presentations on Zoom. It gives me hope that, yes, everything is very scary with the pandemic, and yes, everything's very uncertain, but also like business can continue. And so that as a designer has been giving me a lot of hope going forward for, you know, that things aren't shut down, they're just different. Personally, we moved out to the suburbs and I was really, really nervous because most of my girlfriends still live in the city. And I'm like the first of my girlfriends really to have a kid. And so I was really worried that I wasn't going to meet anyone out here. But people have been so nice. And there have been so many young families who just moved out here with kids similar to Sophie's age. And it's just been really like hopeful to see that even in a pandemic where you like can't even fully see someone's face without a mask on, you can still meet new friends.
Yeah.
That's been a nice part of it, because it's such a weird time for everything.
Indeed. Well, Ariel, this has been so fun. I've loved getting to know more about you and your background and just connecting with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is so much fun. Hopefully sometime soon I can see you again in person.
Yes, I hope so. I would love that. And I'd love to see Charlie and meet Sophie.
Yes, well, give Tate a hug for me in the meantime.
I will. Okay, well, thank you so much, Ariel. All right. That was interior designer and design influencer Ariel Oaken. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to visit us online at palomacontreras.com under the podcast tab, where you can find more episodes featuring inspiring conversations with creatives. You can listen directly on our website or subscribe via Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying the Style Files, please consider spreading the word and leaving us a positive rating or review. It will only take a few seconds of your time, and it will make a big difference for us. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.